Hi, I'm Pam Banky, Director of Product Marketing here at Knowledge Lake, and I'm thrilled to be here today with Gary Smith, our Executive Managing Director. Hi, Gary. It's
Hi,
great to
Pam.
have you with us. I'm really looking forward to diving into the exciting topic of synthetic labor. And I know this concept is new in the automation market, so why don't we kick things off by getting down to the basics? And so, my first question to you is, how would you define synthetic labor?
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you, Pam. I'm happy to be here chatting with you about this because it's an important topic, and there's been a lot of change in the last couple of years, really, within the market space. So I guess for me, how I would define synthetic labor is it's probably more aligned to what Gartner's calling BOAT, which is business orchestration and automation technologies. What this really is expressing is a very different category than RPA. So even within Gartner, they've now decided that RPA is it's a bygone era, and we've moved now or will be moving into this notion of BOAT, this business orchestration and automation technologies. What I find so interesting about that is we actually were founded around those principles and didn't even know it. Several of those things we've done our entire history, going all the way back to when Ron Cameron first founded Knowledge Lake, certainly, but in the recent era, and I consider the recent era to be the last 5.5 to 6 years, we are a completely modern architecture on cloud-based technologies. So we're fully cloud native. And that provides a lot of benefit for clients, right? I mean, you get out of the business of on-prem licensing, the hardware and the network associated with it. You don't get away from the network completely. Obviously, there's network overhead in accessing us on, through the web, but you get away from things like maintenance and things like upgrading, which can be very costly for organizations that are larger. So I look at synthetic labor really as being an amalgamation of our workflow, our IDP, our what I'll call our synthetic worker, because I know it sounds like semantics. I won't say an RPA worker or a digital worker because that was the last generation. We're 1 to 2 generations beyond that, and I'll explain why probably as we're in this discussion, you'll get more detail on it. But and then the last area, of course, is again, it's another founding pillar of our company originally, is what we used to call enterprise content management. We've evolved that to its next stage, which is really it's really data management and understanding all of the unstructured and structured data within the organization and the integration points to it. So in many ways, it's almost like an orchestration layer for the data. So you're orchestrating work, you're orchestrating data, they all come together. And I see synthetic labor as being a second pool or source of labor. I think organizations won't really any longer have a sole source of labor. Typically, you and I have been that, right? It's the human labors, right? So they will be joined, and it will move them up the value stack in terms of the work they're doing and the work, more importantly, that they're not doing, right? Getting rid of that so-called mistake-prone, boring grunt work that humans don't like, and focusing in on things like innovation ideas, interacting with other humans, creating product offerings, refining product offerings, things that really only humans can do so very well, and leaving the rest of that to the synthetic worker.
Great. Now that's a great explanation and definition of what we're talking about here. So, diving a little bit deeper, how do you envision synthetic labor transforming traditional workflows, and how is that going to impact the future of work?
Yeah, that's the multi-million-dollar, or maybe even multi-billion-dollar question. It's a big answer, so bear with me because what's involved in it, and I think you're asking the question correctly to my mind, because you're asking how is the workflow I guess again, drawing down on Gartner's term, how does the business orchestration layer, how does this all occur simultaneously? From my point of view, and where I see our clients using us, particularly our newer clients, maybe in the last year to 6 months, they've understood there's been a huge pivot. And I think how it's going to manifest itself, really, or how we're seeing it manifest itself, is in a couple key ways. The first way is IDP. Where does that overlay with this? Why would that need to be an integrated part of this overall infrastructure that we describe as synthetic labor? Well, if you think about what documents really are, they're either something to create an output document, right? You might be gathering up all sorts of data to create a report, right? And this isn't just reporting in the conventional sense. This is work that you're doing to actually produce a work product, what we call a work product output. That component of it, that what used to be known as IDP, we've wrapped that, as we have in our entire architecture, with AI. So when we're looking at that image, we're able to bring in unstructured data, for example, and actually utilize it. And again, this is a great differentiator for why we look so different than RPA. Most of those, in fact, all those platforms, they had quasi IDP, and in some and in the best cases, and in most cases, they didn't have anything. What does that mean? That means that they're not really able to take advantage of what some would argue is probably 80% of a corporation's data asset, which is unstructured data. You know, think about if you're a pharmaceutical company, you have scientists that are writing in lab notebooks. We have a client doing just that. They're scanning those in now using us, and we can use that unstructured data in the workflow process. The other way I see it changing the workflow is that whole notion of human in the loop, the whole notion of STP work, straight through processing work. We will give reality and meaning to that in a very different way. What do I mean when I say that? Let's take work process. In the past, we've used task mining or process mining to understand it. I've always found that to be a little bit lacking comprehensive approach, because it's really taking all that can be recorded off of a computer. But meanwhile, the human may not work that way, right? Sally may be working on something, but she may do one thing. She may be the very best in the department. She may do one thing that's not being done on the computer. She may bend to the right and open up a file drawer and pull out this file she has and flip to a page and say, yup, and put that value in, and it changes the output quality of her work. Never going to be captured in process or task mining, not unless you're sitting with her and she's taking you through, right? So all these things. So what I think it really changes is how we view work. Work in the context of humans work one way, computers work a very different way, right? I mean, just a very basic example might be like a computer can open up 1,000 spreadsheets at the same time and pull down a particular value and populate it in another spreadsheet. It'll take a human hours to do that. Right. And probably within the context of that, you're going to have transposition errors. So there's a whole series of reasons it's not great. So changing that work, or what we consider in knowledge like to be atomizing work, becomes an essential part of how organizations will work. The other side of that equation, and I know I apologize, this is a long answer, but the other side of that work and how it differs and where we will insert, where we do insert into that value stream, is if you look at the way a human would manage that work and you look at the way a computer would manage that work, right? We know they're radically different and they're altered greatly. But one of the things that I see that it lends itself very well to doing is there's handoff points through the business orchestration layer, right? The workflow layer. Mm-hmm. Workflow becomes so important in all of this. Because now I can take things that maybe a human has created, and I don't even need that human to interact necessarily with the synthetic laborer. They can just email them or text them or Teams them or however the mechanism is to kick that off. Just like I would say to you, hey, Pam, I'm done with the blah, blah, blah spreadsheet. Can you now take it and then move it forward? Right. Same thing. So it's just doing things in a little bit maybe more unique way. And so I see synthetic labor is actually becoming part of the organizational chart. Let's say you're going to grow your company 2x in the next 24 to 36 months. That's the board mandate, right? You know you've got a pipeline of great new product coming out. You know you're going to be able to achieve these goals. In normal circumstances, you'll have to go out and double the size of the company, right? Maybe not quite double, but let's say it's some percentage. Maybe you're going to have to hire 25% more people to accommodate double growth. You don't have to do that with synthetic labor. You just dial up and dial down the volume of labor that's coming in. So it's a hiring preven as well. And I'd also mentioned that they'll reside on the org chart. So if you think about a conventional organization chart, you know, you've got the big boss up here, maybe the VPs down here, and then line managers under each of the VPs. And then under those line managers, you have loads and loads and loads of people. You'll start seeing organizations in the next 2 to 3 to 4 years, I think. Their organization chart won't be expressed simply with human labor. There will be notations of synthetic labor source doing those elements of work. And I think it will impact in a very positive manner things like share price and valuations of organizations, because that will be a signal to Wall Street that the grunt work, the mistake-prone work, the work where you're paying people to make mistakes, not intentionally, it's just the conditions of the work, that will all be mitigated to its least amount, right? And that will be shorthand, I think, to Wall Street, that you'll be able to grow and scale to accommodate, let's face it, a planet with ever-increasing population. And we know there's going to be a lot more work coming.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. It really just is a very powerful way to reimagine work going forward.
Yeah, that's a great way to think of it, Pam. You know, you and I have talked about this before, right?
Right.
We're reworking work. Not since the 1950s and the advent of the mainframe have we really had a discussion about work. So much of work that was once owned by the business, the line of business, right, or the so-called business function, now gets owned actually by IT. And it's an interesting conundrum because in some ways the business, through synthetic labor, they will partner in a much more meaningful way, I think, than IT, right? There's going to be IT is going to have its role certainly in data access and a whole variety of things, but it won't own the process anymore in the form of a BPO outsource project or in the form of, right? I mean, you've got workers working in these massive systems, but at the end of the day, IT owns them. And that's really probably not where they most rightly belong, right? They rightly belong as a worker doing the task.
Correct. So you touched on this a little bit earlier with regards to RPA, but if we can dive in a little deeper into how synthetic labor does differ from RPA and from digital workers.
Yeah, that's another great question, Pam. I love that because it is important for folks to understand this is not RPA. It's not RPA 2.0. Again, I guess what I'll come back to for those that are truly interested in this and are really looking to morph their company, and they should be, right? When I think about the crisis that most organizations are facing, and it is a crisis, it's an existential crisis that we know to be occurring, and the most important evidence I think we've seen for that lately was in December, PwC released their 27th annual CEO study. And this is a study of about 4,500 CEOs globally, and it's across a variety of sizes of industry. So it's not like all just, you know, the Fortune 5000. It's there's certainly a component of that, but there are also smaller and mid-sized organizations in there. And the most stark statistic that I took away from that when I read it was 45% of the CEOs surveyed in this year's survey said that they are concerned if they don't pivot and change the way they work and create a new spectrum of innovation, they will be irrelevant in the next decade, the organization. If you think about that, that is an absolutely horrifying thought. We are talking about 45% of 4,500 interviewed CEOs. I don't even know what that would mean for the world of business,
Right.
but I know it's bad. And this is the thing. It's, they're talking about where does AI fit in this? How we work fit into this? There's a junction in all this, Pam. If you look at the way our platform had been has been architected, I call it software labor as a service, right? Some people might call it's just a platform as a service, PaaS, whatever term you want to use. The reason I use our term so specifically is because in most cases, organizations are looking for that innovation to come from AI exclusively. Here's the problem I see with that. You don't add an AI package and bang, you're an AI organization. If you think of the way most people are using AI right now, it's ChatGPT or it's something like Gemini Pro, or maybe it's something like, any of them, pick any of them.
Sure.
But it's really, and it's not even at that agent level, right? So I look at that and I see, again, I'll come back to something Gartner advocates in their boat. Their business orchestration and automation technology approach, which, by the way, I think you're going to be seeing a Magic Quadrant coming on that in the not too distant future. They're basically saying, this is how you transform the operation. This is how you transform labor, right? If you read in between the lines of how they're talking about this, and so where that differs from RPA, I guess coming full loop back to your question is, most RPA to this day is not good at things like document processing, intelligent document processing, IDP, right? It certainly has a very weak notion of workflow. And again, that to me, that's workflow is the whole shooting match, right? If
Right.
you don't, because it's almost like you've got to be if you think a boat, you almost have to like a be a BPO. But you don't want that monolithic nature of it, and you don't want something that's such an IT-focused tool. You want something that's a source of labor, right? Automation and RPA, they were kind of like labor, right? Because what they were doing was they were doing the work of humans, but they were taking very specific processes and they were getting very minute tasks, work you might have been doing at your desk, right? I no longer have to do this. This digital worker's doing it. Maybe you set up a pool so for everybody in your team, everybody had that same access.
Right.
We're talking about bona fide end-to-end enterprise-grade work where you're breaking out and componentizing the work so that repeatability in something like order entry and something like maybe inventory management and accounts payable, there are repeatable elements that can be reused across that stack, and you'll have already built out what will be a synthetic laborer to do certain functions that snap right in those things, right? I look at
Yeah.
it this way. We almost have to take it and look at it through the lens of Porter's value chain, right? Professor Michael Porter's his big approach in 85, right? This is that. It's taking each element of the value stream of the organization and breaking the work down by that particular stream and making it more efficient to turn it into margin and turn it into a much, much, much higher work efficiency ratio, right? That measure comes out too. And RPA is not geared in any world to do that. And I think this is one of the reasons you're seeing Gartner making a distinction between RPA and now what they're calling BOAT, this
Right.
business orchestration and automation technology layer. I think we're more appropriate to the boat and certainly don't have. I know the Gartner MQ just came out on RPA. That's why we're not in there. That's not what we do, right? We're
Fact.
a world beyond that.
Absolutely. Well, Gary, this has been a great conversation. Thank you so much for bringing this to the market. And for anyone interested in exploring how synthetic labor can transform your operations, do not hesitate to reach out. We'd love to discuss this further and discuss how this can make a difference for your business. So visit us at knowledgelake.com. Thank you.
Thank you, Pam.
Thanks, Gary.